This is Illinois in Focus, a production of America's Talking Network. I'm Greg Bishop. Coming up, we'll review the week's top stories about problems at some state agencies, relaxing of vaccine and testing mandates in higher ed, parents opting out of controversial sex ed curriculum, proposed gun control legislation, and more. Plus, we'll get commentary from the Center Square publisher Chris Krug and executive editor Dan McCaleb about accelerated inflation, the state's population decline, and the cost of transit. That's ahead with Illinois in Focus, the production of America's Talking Network. Listen to all our podcasts at americastalking.com. I'm Greg Bishop.
If you're tired of the divisive rhetoric in our country today, then America's Talking Network is for you. America's Talking Network is a new podcast hub where you can find civil conversations.
What does America need to be saved from?
The birth of my son is the birth of this channel, because when he was born, it completely changed the way I think about the world.
Find out what's happening in our country.
And of course, everyone's prices are going up around the country. If you've been to the grocery store, you've seen it. If you've made a budget, you probably had to increase your monthly allotment for a lot of different things.
And find out what's happening right here in our backyard of Illinois.
The price you pay at the pump, wherever you're buying your gasoline in Illinois, is all inclusive of the taxes that are built into this thing.
That sort of explains why Illinois' average is significantly higher than the national average.
The only agenda that America's Talking Network has is to get America talking again. Go to americastalking.com to check out all of our podcasts. Once again, that's americastalking.com.
This is Illinois in Focus, a production of America's Talking Network. I'm Greg Bishop. Here are some of the top stories from the past week. Inflation set another 40-year record Wednesday, with the Consumer Price Index up 9.1% over the past 12 months. Fuel is up nearly 100%. In May, the Consumer Price Index for the year rose 8.8%. It accelerated in June to 9.1%. While fuel oil decreased 1.2% over the month, it increased 98.5% over the year. All types of gasoline are up nearly 60%. Trevor Miller operates Precision Detailing in Springfield, a custom detailing and automobile accessory and restoration shop, and he's seen prices double, if not more.
You're talking thousands and thousands of dollars that are just going out for shipping. You know, what used to cost me $100 to get something here from California, they told me $450 last week. $450.
Todd Meisch, CEO of the Illinois Chamber of Commerce, said inflation impacts everyone from businesses to consumers. He expects layoffs to follow, as has been seen elsewhere.
Even a great success story for the state of Illinois, Rivian Motors, up the road in Bloomington, has announced job cuts. So unfortunately, there are going to be more of those coming.
As faith in the U.S. economy is well positioned to weather the storm, but he urged Illinoisans to get policymakers to send a signal. Are they going to increase taxes, citing a recession?
Or are we going to weather the storm and show that government can be on sound fiscal footing, be conservative on our expenditures, and not raise taxes at the worst possible time? That's the real question for policymakers in Illinois.
Income and property taxpayers in Illinois can expect to see state rebate checks sometime the second week of September, just before the November election. Illinois lawmakers approved a $50 rebate per income tax filer and up to $300 rebate for property tax owners, depending on the value of the property. Managing the payments is Illinois Comptroller Susanna Mendoza.
So my expectation is that by the week of September 12th, is that my office will be prepared to start issuing those rebates.
Mendoza said taxpayers need to just sit back.
Most people have already filed their income tax returns. And so if you did, and you, whether you had to pay or you got money back, it doesn't matter. Everyone who filed will be getting a tax rebate.
Payments will be made electronically or by check, depending on how the individual filed. Only those who paid property taxes will get the property tax rebate. More details are expected in the weeks ahead. The attorney that sued Governor J.B. Pritzker and several public universities and community colleges over vaccine or testing mandates is claiming victory after the governor modified his order. Wednesday, Pritzker's office announced modified COVID-19 executive orders that were first issued back in August of 2021 for all K-12 staff, college staff and students, and workers in the medical industry to vaccinate or test. The updates Wednesday, it drops the vaccine or testing mandate in higher ed. Attorney Thomas DeVorb, who's also the GOP candidate for Attorney General in the November election, sued the governor and several colleges over the mandate June 22nd.
It's my opinion that given that these colleges were in a position where they had to answer our lawsuit within the next week or two, the governor issued this modified executive order to try to render our lawsuit moot. There's no facts and science to support any of what he just did. It's a way to get these colleges out of the hot box where they were going to have to answer this lawsuit. So to that extent, I'm pleased that my clients and the rest of the kids in college, as well as the educators, are no longer under this vaccination or test policy. I'm grateful for that, but it's sad that it took another lawsuit to accomplish that.
DeVore also has a case pending in county court challenging the K-12 vaccine or testing mandate for staff, which remains in place. The mandate also remains for daycares and certain medical settings. As school districts begin to review whether they'll provide students comprehensive sex ed, a parents' rights group is encouraging districts and parents to opt out. Governor J.B. Pritzker signed Senate Bill 818 last year that aligns the state's sex ed standards with the national sex education standards. If a district teaches sex ed, they have to follow the standards. Parents can opt out. Awake Illinois founder Shannon Adcock said the standards are an activist-based woke curriculum that looks to promote social and cultural change through sex education.
Why are we going to implement this, you know, super perverted form of comprehensive sex ed when these kids have a lot of other, teachers and parents have a lot of other priorities beyond teaching, you know, kindergartners about, cisgender and their pronouns. They need to learn how to read. They need to learn how to write. They need to be with their peers.
Adcock has the website awakeil.com/opt-out with more information. Two executive state agencies in Illinois are failing vulnerable populations, stakeholders say, and lawsuits and contempt of court charges are stacking up. More sheriffs across the state are expected to sign on to challenges against the governor's administration over criminal defendants deemed unfit for trial not being transferred and evaluated by the state in a timely manner. The Illinois Department of Human Services was recently found in contempt of court for not transferring an inmate from Sangamon County Jail for a mental health evaluation. There are other pending cases where inmates have been transferred, but only after litigation. Illinois Sheriff's Association Executive Director Jim Kaichek said what's happening is a waste of taxpayer resources.
I'll have a court hearing that's scheduled for tomorrow, and suddenly today I find an available bed. How does that happen, right? Just before I go to court, I find a space. Time after time after time.
Sangamon County's seeking a standalone temporary restraining order against Pritzker's executive orders, limiting transfers, and Kaichek expects that other sheriffs are going to jump on.
They may have been filing their own litigation separately, unrelated to this, but I think you may see, you know, some additional sheriffs sign into this one moving forward.
A status hearing in the Sangamon County Challenge is set for August 1st. The Illinois Department of Children and Family Services continues to get negative attention for how children under its watch are treated. A leading State House Republican wants answers. The governor has said his administration is working through the problems with bed availability for children in DCFS, but he also said that they're working through those problems that were created under the previous administration. House Minority Leader Jim Durkin said the governor has only given lip service to the problems as contempt of court charges stack up against the agency's director.
They treat a contempt of court citation as if it's a jaywalking violation. This is just so wrong. These are children's lives that are at stake. The governor likes to blame everyone else except his own agency. He takes no responsibility.
Then there's a recent audit Durkin said is devastating, showing the department didn't have proper records on 192 of 195 cases.
And that was a requirement under a law that J.B. Pritzker signed within the last 2 years. So his agency is not even following the law which they have championed.
The Cook County Public Guardian this week said on social media at least 8 children have died since December, despite DCFS being involved in their cases. Either remaining federal funds Illinois still holds or recently reported windfall in state revenue should go pay down the state's remaining unemployment trust fund debt. That's according to one state lawmaker. Illinois state government accumulated more than $4 billion in unemployment trust fund debt during the COVID-19 pandemic economic restrictions imposed by the governor. Earlier this year, lawmakers approved using $2.7 billion in federal tax funds to pay some of that down. About $1.8 billion remains unpaid. State Representative Dan Ugasti is calling for a special session so lawmakers can pay down the debt with either remaining federal funds or a recently reported windfall of more than $1.8 billion in state revenue.
And with that money, we can easily pay the unemployment insurance debt, which equals $1.8 billion, and in doing so, save Illinois taxpayers money because they will not be paying interest on that deficit anymore to the federal government?
Messages seeking comment from the office of the House Speaker, Senate President, and the governor were not returned. Paying the debt also means no prospect of increased taxes on employers or reduced benefits for the unemployed. But despite $2.7 billion already being paid off, there's still no clarity on the entire scope of fraud paid out in the state's unemployment system.
We are not receiving any type of information from the administration as to how much fraud they believe occurred and what those numbers look like, and even what processes are taking place to directly address it.
Last month, the Auditor General found the state paid out nearly $2 billion in federal tax funds to fraudsters, but also found the accounting was so horrendous they couldn't fully determine the amount of fraud that occurred. And a measure gaining Democratic support at the Illinois State House would ban the possession of certain types of guns. House Bill 5522 from State Representative Maura Hershauer. It would prohibit the sales, transfer, and possession of, quote, assault weapons and large-capacity ammunition feeding devices. She said on social media, quote, weapons of war have no place in our homes or on our streets. Her bill has 51 co-sponsors, most added after the July 4th mass shooting in Highland Park. Republican State Senator Neil Anderson criticized advancing such measures.
This is more emotional rhetoric, using words that don't even exist to try to gin people up that also don't know anything about firearms. And what is assault weapon? Define assault weapon.
Among other things, Hershauer's bill defines an assault weapon as a semi-automatic rifle, pistol, or shotgun. If passed and enacted, violations could bring up to a Class 2 felony, punishable by up to 7 years in prison. Those are the top stories from the past week from Illinois. Find more online at americastalking.com. Coming up for Illinois in Focus, commentary from the Center Square publisher Chris Krug and executive editor Dan McCaleb. This is Illinois in Focus, a production of America's Talking Network. I'm Greg Bishop.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Illinois in Focus podcast. This is the Crosstalk segment, commentary powered by the Center Square. I'm Chris Krug, publisher of the Center Square, and I'll be joined by my friend and colleague, executive editor of the Center Square, Mr. Dan McCaleb.
How you doing, Chris? On the road again, huh?
I'm on the road again. Coming to you live on tape on Thursday, July 14th from the District of Columbia. Things here are interesting. I have to tell you, I took a walk around the district last night, and it is, it's interesting. People are fired up.
Yeah. Did you bump into the president or first lady while you were there?
I didn't bump into anyone physically or metaphorically. Neither. No, I did not. I'm disappointed because I had a couple questions that I wanted to ask, but I'll leave that to Casey Harper, DC Bureau Chief of the Center Square.
How about Gavin Newsom? Did you see him roaming around the White House?
I did not see him roaming around either. No, in fact, I haven't seen anybody that, you know, that you would consider to be like a public figure. I'm pretty sure that most of them don't go outside. And it was, you know, as I was,
if they do, they get bombarded at restaurants and by protesters and whatnot. So why bother?
Yeah. Right. Right. Civility. It's out the door. You and I have to be the stewards of civility. And, of course we're focusing on Illinois. We'll start there today and then we'll spread the message of civility and open dialogue to other places at a later time.
Does that mean we can't raise our voices today or what?
No, it does not mean that.
Okay.
It does not mean that. I fully anticipate that you're going to raise your voices. You're going to raise your voice. I may raise mine. So there may be raised voices, plural.
But we'll be civil about it.
Well, I mean, we have to talk about inflation, right? That's the consumer price index was released yesterday, and it set a record, 40-year record The consumer price index is up 9.1% over the past 12 months. I had a chance to talk in depth on Everyday Economics, a podcast that we create for the America's Talking Network, with Dr. Orfe Devungi, the PhD economist, yesterday.
Smart guy.
And he is a smart guy. And he does not see any ease up in sight. He's Orfe is an optimist. I don't know that you and I have ever been called that by anyone. So how pessimistic are you?
Well, the fact that we, of course, inflation is affecting everybody across the country, across the world, but the fact that we live in Illinois, which is ill prepared to handle things like inflation and a potential recession, which we could be seeing here, I'm pessimistic, to answer your question.
Yeah. I mean, so from a policy standpoint, I mean, is there anything, well, first of all, let me ask you this. You know, like I said, I'm out of town. I'm asking in a capacity of someone who needs to know. Is the state of Illinois said anything? Are they doing anything? Is there a committee being called together? Is there any conversation about what might be done in the state to ease the pain of inflation to Illinoisans?
I think our elected officials feel that they've done their job by suspending for 6 months the inflationary 2-cent increase in the state's gas tax. So you, me, all other Illinois motorists, we get a 2-cent tax break on that $5.10 a gallon gas price here in the state of Illinois.
Well, I'll tell you, before I left town, after I left Chicago to come to DC, I was, I should say before that, I was in Milwaukee and picked up some gasoline on the way home. I kind of wished I would have filled my entire truck bed with gasoline because I only paid $4.29 a gallon. And I believe I picked that up in Racine or Pleasant Prairie, somewhere along I-94. But by the time I got back to, you know, approximately where we live, I saw gasoline as expensive as $5.59 a gallon in Illinois.
Yeah, unfortunately, gas prices have ticked very slightly down in recent weeks, but Illinois is still one of just a handful of states above $5 a gallon, average statewide. Looking at AAA's website right now, $5.09 a gallon. You referenced Milwaukee. All of Wisconsin's average is $4.40 a gallon. Iowa's $4.42. Missouri's $4.34. So all of our neighbors are significantly lower than Illinois.
Yeah. And I think that that's one of the places where the average consumer feels the biggest pinch. But as I had said to Orfe during the taping of Everyday Economics, you know, I feel as if with the consistent basket of stuff that I buy at the grocery store, and it's part of my responsibility to my home, is that I'm the one who goes grocery shopping for like the big stuff, you know, like meat and whatnot for the week. I bought a regular basket, nothing in there that I wouldn't normally buy. And it came back, usually my bill's about $175. My bill came back at $211. And I don't know what was in there that would have thrown it over the turnbuckle, but it was noticeably different this past week.
But you saved a penny on every single dollar you spent in Illinois' grocery tax.
It really didn't feel like it.
That's the relief our politicians are giving to us.
It's interesting because, you know, we've talked a lot about the stickers on gas pumps. I don't know if it was mandatory or not mandatory, but the local Jewel Osco that I shopped at had a sticker in the window that did tell me that the tax on groceries on some items had been zeroed. So
it technically was mandatory by our famed state lawmakers. They, when they put the gas pump sticker in place, They told grocery stores they had to post signs saying they also suspended the 1 cent grocery tax. However, the grocers weren't facing $500 daily fines if they didn't do it, whereas the gas stations face $500 daily fines if they don't.
Well, that seems fair. So, Dan, I mean, as far as it goes with inflation, we're all feeling it. Do you have any vibe whatsoever on how long it's going to be before the average Illinoisan gets any relief?
Not anytime soon. That's about the best answer I give. Everything we're hearing is that inflation is going to continue to soar. Prices are going to continue to go up. Now we have seen gas prices tick down, but they're still, at this time last year, it was still $1.50 a gallon cheaper than it is now. They're still elevated. And particularly when you combine it with what's going on in the overall economy, where, the economy shrank in the first quarter. It's now the third quarter. We're just into the third quarter, a couple weeks into July now. We should be getting GDP, gross domestic product data, here within a week or two to see what happened in the second quarter. And if there's negative growth again in the second quarter, that's the definition of a recession. And our Greg Bishop, the Center Square's Illinois associate editor, Greg Bishop, talked to the state CEO or the state Chamber of Commerce CEO yesterday, and he has real concerns that if we are in a recession or if we go into a recession, that we're going to see elevated unemployment numbers because small businesses are getting crushed right now.
Yeah, and I think that's the reality. And the one thing that that Orphy had mentioned was that our productivity overall was not very high. So that's a bad combination of things, and that is a product in all likelihood of more experienced workers, people who had been in the industries that they serve for a longer period of time, leaving, and less experienced workers, most likely younger workers, joining the workforce and not being able to do as much as experienced workers are able to do. And so that's obviously not a good contributing factor either. And it would probably lead to businesses limiting further hiring. And of course, you said that gas prices ticked down. They're still ridiculous.
Outrageous. Still above $5 a gallon in Illinois.
Yeah, there's not a single business out there, including ours, that doesn't have some connection to the price of fuel.
Yeah.
So it's not good. I still think that that's the place where we have to work to find a reasonable cure. That when energy prices are down, the economy typically performs far better. So,
and our president is in the our president whose green energy policies have put further restrictions on the oil and gas industry, making it more difficult to produce more oil and gas. He's on a Mideast tour right now.
Yeah.
Where he's expected to beg, Saudi Arabia to drill more when we've got oil and gas in our backyard right here in the country. We were energy independent a couple of years ago. I don't know.
It gets lost on you and obviously, as you just said, it's lost on me too. Meanwhile, as part of that walk around the district, there were stickers, and they're placed on the bottom of lampposts around here that have Joe Biden in a Maverick from Top Gun sort of outfit with the leather jacket and the sunglasses on. And key Democrat members of Congress, including Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, in squadron uniforms, encouraging them to finish the job on green energy at this time. So.
Yeah, let's finish the job. $10 gas. That's fine.
Looking forward to that. If you don't like the price of gasoline in Illinois, you're free to move about the country and buy it cheaper somewhere else because you don't live here anymore. The analysis that United Van Lines does showed some interesting data, and it further confuses the notion that Illinois actually grew between census 2010 and census 2020. Can you help fill in the gaps there, sir?
Well, it was actually, there was a Federal Reserve Bank analysis of United Van Line statistics. And as you and I have talked about, and as we've known for the past decade or almost a decade, you know, more people are leaving Illinois than are coming in. And the number one reason for people leaving Illinois, they tell...
It's the weather. It's the weather, Dan.
It's common misconception, Chris. Oh, let me set the record straight.
Please.
It's the state's high taxes, over-regulatory policies on businesses, and corruption within state and local governments. But let's face it, there's better jobs and greener pastures elsewhere, and many former Illinoisans have taken advantage of that.
So Florida, prior to the pandemic, was the top destination. During the pandemic, Illinoisans sought to move to North Carolina and Tennessee. That seems pretty reasonable. I mean, in terms of, you know, I mean, I think that tracks with the anecdotal at the very least.
And you know, Arizona and Texas are states that often get mentioned. Of course, neighboring states, if you can afford to commute, if you have to commute, like, for example, to Chicago, people have left for Indiana, just across the border, Wisconsin, just across the border. Of course, since the pandemic, more people are able to work remotely, so you don't have to live in the same place that you work, and that's incentivizing people to move.
Yeah. It's an election year, as you know, midterms, and all of the executive responsibilities within the Illinois state government are up as well this year. Tom DeVore, the attorney who represented Darren Bailey when he was, well, he still is a senator, and he's vying to be governor as the Republican. But Tom DeVore was very much at the forefront on the vaccination requirements, COVID masking, really anything that had to do with the infringement of personal liberty around COVID and COVID mandates. He raised the victory flag this week after Governor J.B. Pritzker dropped vaccine testing as a mandate for higher education staff and students. What's the scoop on that story?
Yeah, this is interesting. And if I ever get in front of Governor Pritzker, I want to ask him about the science and the data behind this one. Of course, since the pandemic, for almost 2.5 years now, Governor Pritzker has been governing by executive order. And among those executive orders were vaccine or testing mandates for K through 12 education, for higher education, healthcare settings and other congregate settings. As you mentioned, Thomas DeVore, candidate, Republican's nominee for attorney general, has filed countless suits against the governor.
We could count them. It would just take a while.
How much longer do we have?
I'm not sure. We need to hire an intern just to count them, I think.
Essentially challenging those restrictions, one, because they're not legislatively adopted. Governor Pritzker has acted on his own without legislature passing any mandates or restrictions. And two, because it violates due process. Essentially, if you don't, things like the close contacts to someone who's had COVID, you're prevented from going to school, for example, under Pritzker's mandates. Well, interestingly enough, Thomas DeVore has filed several suits against those because of the due process violations. He's won several of them. One of his lawsuits was on behalf of university staff. Of course, we're in the middle of July now. Schools are going to be opening up back up in a month or so. That lawsuit was scheduled for a hearing later this month. And Governor Pritzker this week essentially ease those requirements on for universities. Staff no longer have to prove vaccine status or face weekly testing, but he did not do the same for K through 12, which is interesting.
It's curious. Do you have any thoughts on that? Any insights as to why?
I have a thought. It's an assumption, but I think it's a pretty good one. The state's teachers unions essentially have huge influence on Governor Pritzker. And the
K through 12
teachers unions. And so Governor Pritzker was facing losing another lawsuit to Tom DeBoer on the university side. So he essentially, I don't want to say he caved, he did the right thing. These mandates shouldn't have been in place in the first place, but he was facing another court loss in this university lawsuit. So he just decided to change the science and the data to accommodate the university workers and make this lawsuit go away.
Mm.
But he's not doing the same for K through 12 educators. And I wonder how much teachers' unions influence has on that decision.
Well, I mean, that's fascinating. I mean, in particular now with this headline from CNN today, I mean, it was really, really stark. The, quote, worst variant, end quote, is here. That's from that is from today, July 14th, from CNN. Story read, nearly 2.5 years since the coronavirus pandemic began, the most infectious and transmissible variant has arrived. It's BA5.
Does it go on to say, though, that it's not not having a huge effects on folks in terms of making them sick or killing them?
I'm scrolling through the story, and I'm not seeing that. Let's see if they put that in at the bottom.
Because in fact, it is true. Cases are rising across the country. COVID-19 cases are rising across the country, but hospitalizations and deaths are flat.
Yeah. No, I'm not seeing anything in there about severity. Must not have made the old printing press there at CNN.
I'm sure it was the paragraph right there before they had to chop it for the printing press.
Yeah. Okay, that's good stuff. Anything else on the vax testing story? I mean, Tom DeBoer claiming victory. He's actually had several. I mean, you know, along the way. I mean, they've just been, you know, in some cases, you know, I mean, like. You know, winning the liberty of one person, you know, was when Darren Bailey was basically declared not needing to comply with the state mask law as an individual, which was cool for Darren Bailey, I guess. And if you were not Darren Bailey, then everybody else, like everybody else, you're kind of like, what's that mean?
And he won that massive lawsuit. That involved hundreds of parents from school districts. I can't remember how many dozens, more than 70, I think, school districts across the state with their mask requirements in schools. Of course, under Governor Pritzker, we were masking kids, you know, up till was it March or April of this year for a year and a half if you wanted to participate in school.
Yeah,
that's exactly he won that lawsuit on behalf of his clients there, and he's won several. Several others. You know, it is going to be interesting, though, if, as you mentioned, thank you, CNN, for the headline, as cases continue to rise, if they continue to rise, and we get closer to the start of the school year, what Governor Pritzker is going to do to our school children for the 2022-2023 school year.
Well, as previously noted, I mean, he has an election that's coming up. And it would be interesting to see if he governs differently in the, you know, very near to the election rather than, you know, winding the clock back to 2020, where he was very much securely in his role and didn't have any actual political pressure to do anything that he didn't want to do.
That's an interesting point. You've with this being an election year, you've got to wonder, does he want that fight on his hands once the school year starts? Because parents are just fed up with it. But on the other side of it, Illinois is just one of a handful of states that are still under a declared state of emergency.
Could you talk about that for a second? I mean, you know, you'd mentioned that to me the other day on a budget call, and it's not as if I've forgotten, but I hadn't thought about it for a while. I mean, we have been under a constant state of emergency as a consequence of COVID for over 2 years, I guess, at this point, right? I mean, wouldn't it be since March
of 2020?
Right. Right before, well, it was right after Election Day and then right before St. Patrick's Day. Or did those two things intersect? Was Election Day on St. Patrick's Day? That would have been a municipal election in 2020.
Yeah, it was. I don't remember. It was around the same time. But yeah, Governor.
Oh, no. Hey, I just let real quick. St. Patrick's Day was canceled. The elections went on as scheduled. That's for me, that's the way that I look at it.
Well, you got to get your priorities in order, right?
Well, I felt like they got them backwards, to be honest with you. As an Irish person with a German last name.
Anyway,
I don't know how you feel about being Irish, but, you know, pretty proud of it.
I celebrate a lot less than I have in years past. But anyway, getting back to Governor Pritzker's executive orders, state of emergency. Governor Pritzker, even though we're 2.5 years into the pandemic, people have largely given up on the pandemic and are over the pandemic, I should say. Governor Pritzker continues to extend Illinois' state of emergency in case, and this is his words, not mine, in case he needs to issue more executive orders. The state of emergency gives him the authority and the power to act unilaterally to issue these executive orders without direction from the state legislature, the people elected by voters to represent them and their interests in the state of Illinois. So that's why I'm wondering, a month from now, when kids start going back to school, what he's going to do if rates remain, COVID-19 infection rates remain high.
I think that's going to be interesting, and that's absolutely a story that we're going to have to keep a close watch on. And inside of the K-12 space, I mean, it's you know, it's not in our sort of our plan for discussion, but a lot of schools around the state, their school boards are discussing Senate Bill 818, which is the sex education curriculum. And asking for, I guess the way this works is it's asking for opt-outs, right? You would be opting in unless your district chose to opt out. And the concern that a lot of parents have with SB 818 is the subject matter and the age at which it's being taught, because sex ed would be under the state plan, which has passed. Sex ed would be taught as early on as kindergarten.
Right. So Governor Pritzker signed into law a bill that was passed by the legislature that essentially, if school districts in the state of Illinois are going to offer sex education programming, they have to follow this national guideline. And the concern among many parents and others is that it's age inappropriate material. So if a school district decides to offer sex education, to teach sex education, they've got to follow this national standard. Parents can opt their children out of it. Mm-hmm. But if parents don't know about it, your parents are busy, parents work, have full-time jobs. If they don't know about it, they can't opt their child out of it. So they might unknowingly be sending their children into a class that they disagree with, mm-hmm. and or the subject matter they disagree with, and they'll probably eventually learn from their child that, hey, I've been reading and talking about this questionable content mm-hmm. for a 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 7-year-old, 8-year-old.
Nobody's putting stickers on gas pumps for that. Uh-huh.
Yeah, no, there's no advertisement of that.
Oh, very, very interesting. Hey, last thing I wanted to talk to you about, and this is a story that Center Square wrote about when it was approved. And some may remember Andrew Yang, who ran for president as a Democrat in 2020. A big part of his platform was the idea of the installation of universal basic income, which would have guaranteed, I think, that every American started out with like $12,000 or something like that. And I don't believe that the way that his plan was crafted, that there was any exclusion that everybody would have gotten $12,000, which I'm not sure how that works in the world of economics. The next time I have a chance to talk with Orfe on Everyday Economics, I will ask him that question. He will probably laugh.
You talk about 40-year high inflation. Oh my God! Imagine if that.
I mean, it would the fast track to Venezuela there, right? And if you think that the 9.1%, you know, is bad in the last 12 months, just for comparison's sake, in our, you know, nearby neighbor Venezuela, it's 176%. Wow. So yeah, and they've got a lot of oil there, so I'm told. They just can't figure out how to get it out of the ground or sell it, apparently. So. But anyway,
Biden might be visiting there next.
That seems like a shorter flight than Riyadh, you know. The universal basic income idea has actually been implemented in Chicago. And it's a story that's not getting a lot of attention. It's a limited program. It's 5,000 households that are receiving $500 a month in taxpayer dollars. And it's going to last for a year. I believe it began in March.
No, it was approved in March, but it took effect this week. It started this Monday. First checks went out. In total, this pilot program, they're calling it a pilot program, but you know, as these essentially welfare programs are, it's hard to scale them back after you put them in place. But it's going to cost Chicago taxpayers $31.5 million this year. Of course, Chicago's finances are fine. They don't need the.
They're running it like a multi-trillion-dollar surplus in the city of Chicago, aren't they?
That's anyway, so it started this month. 5,000 households, of course, lower income households. You have to meet certain income thresholds. Are going to be getting this $500 a check. And by the way, we're still in a hiring crisis in this country where many businesses are having a hard time finding employees. How is this going to incentivize people to go back to work?
Well, I mean, if it's in addition to whatever other, you know, public assistance you'd be receiving, which I assume that it would be based on, you know, what the Center Square wrote this week and what I recall from the discussion back in February. And forgive me, I thought it had been like immediately put into play, but it's just starting this week. You're talking about some very, very, very poor people. I mean, based on the federal poverty level, that you'd have to be at or below 250% of the federal poverty level, which is, I mean, I'm not exactly sure how you could be in that situation if you're already on some level of assistance. And I'm presuming, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that the people who are receiving this additional $6,000 a year are also going to be receiving the full federal assistance available to them, you know, made possible by federal and state taxpayers.
More likely the vast majority of them are. I can't speak for, you know, all 5,000 participants, of course, but the most likely the vast majority of them get some sort of housing or rental assistance, get SNAP benefits, you know, previously called food stamps, perhaps get child care assistance. My guess would, and that's all it is, isn't a guess, it's an assumption, is that the vast majority of them get other taxpayer funded benefits.
And if you're listening to us in the Metro East, you know, which is quite possible, I mean, the Illinois In Focus podcast is available all over the world, including the Metro East, that there's a similar program there worth about $3.6 million. And that is going to launch at some point this year, but we're not sure when.
The state is still writing the rules for that program, but the budget passed by the state legislature and signed by Governor Pritzker included this separate from the city of Chicago, this separate universal basic income program for residents in the Metro East. They're still working out the details on who's going to be eligible, how you're going to apply for it, et cetera, but that's coming soon too.
And that's, but that one is being paid for exclusively by state taxpayers.
Yes.
So yeah, that is a state budget line item.
So you and me and your neighbors and my neighbors and everybody across the state who pay taxes are paying for this program, this, the Metro East program.
Well, you're welcome. All right. Well, that's, I think that'll do it. Any other thoughts on anything else going on in your world, young man?
Just
you celebrate your birthday.
That was eons ago.
I know. I feel like we missed out something there. This is episode 199. So next week is episode 200. We've been doing this a lot.
200, man. That is quite a lot. We going to celebrate somehow, or should we get producer John to I don't know.
Producer John said that he was going to do a little work on the intro and outro music that accompanies our segment.
A little headbanger music, maybe?
Hope. Yeah, some screamo, maybe. Something like that. I'd ask for Outlaw Country. I don't think we're going to get it, but we'll see. We'll see. Positive vibes there, Dan. Positive vibes.
I'm looking forward to the changes.
Always a pleasure, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, safe travels.
For Dan McCaleb, this has been Chris Krug. You've been listening to the Illinois In Focus podcast. This was the Crosstalk segment commentary powered by the Center Square. Now over to the jut-jawed man from Springfield, Illinois Associate Editor Greg Bishop, for a look at what the Center Square will be working on next week.
Next week, the team from the Center Square will continue to look more into the impacts some accelerated inflation has on the state's economy and look for when a pre-election special session will be called and what topics will be addressed. Visit thecentersquare.com/Illinois for more. This has been Illinois In Focus, a production of America's Talking Network. I'm Greg Bishop.